top stories, Iran's deputy foreign minister Abbas Araghchi says talks on the revival of the 2015 nuclear deal will resume after the new administration takes office in Tehran. Media reports say Israel has authorized several cyber surveillance firms to cooperate with Saudi Arabia amid concerns over the kingdom's use of spyware to crush dissent. Bahrain's main opposition party, Al-Wafaq, marks the fourth anniversary of its dissolution by the Al-Khalifa regime. Stories of just past 7:30 in the morning over here in Tehran.
Welcome to the program.
Tehran says a humanitarian prisoner exchange will take place with the U.S. and the U.K. if Washington and London meet their obligation under the swap deal. In a tweet, Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Araghchi said 10 prisoners on all sides may be released on Sunday. He warned the U.S. and Britain to stop linking, quote, a humanitarian exchange with the Iran nuclear deal. Araghchi said the talks on reviving the 2015 nuclear agreement will resume after the administration of President-elect Ebrahim Raisi takes charge next month. 3 years after Washington's unilateral withdrawal, Iran and the remaining signatories to the Iran nuclear deal began talks in April to revive the accord. Saudi Arabia has reportedly received help from Israeli cybersecurity firms to silence dissent. The New York Times cited sources as saying Israel authorized several companies to cooperate with the Arab Kingdom's surveillance activities. The report says Israel gave the go-ahead to another firm even after the 2018 murder of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, an incident that drew international condemnation. Among the companies were the NSO, best known for its Pegasus program, which has been used by numerous governments to spy on and often imprison human rights activists. International human rights lawyer Edward Corrigan says the Israeli spyware has also been used by other groups and governments of questionable repute.
Saudi Arabia's got one of the worst human rights records on the planet, and they are using this technology to suppress dissent and to get its enemies around the world. Jamal Khashoggi, according to the New York Times, his phone was hacked, and a lot of his friends' phones were hacked. So it's doing it. The Israelis say, oh, we will never allow that, but of course they're doing it all the time. And if you sell the company or the product, especially Pegasus, to Saudi Arabia or to other authoritarian states, the United Arab Emirates is heavily involved in this. They even have their own agencies and companies that operate. And as well, the Israelis are people who graduate from Unit 8200, then get hired by these companies, and they poach people from each other. So it's a very, very competitive business, but it's also very dangerous. Even the United States, nominally a democracy, the CIA, the NSA, they spy on people and get all this information, and the temptation is just too much. So it's a massive violation of privacy. And, where they can plant false stuff. Sometimes, like Mexico was using Pegasus to sort of in its war against the Mexican drug cartels.
Israeli forces attacked Palestinian protesters in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of East Jerusalem al-Quds. Protesters were demonstrating against Israel's planned evictions of Palestinians in the neighborhood. They also called on the regime to stop restricting their movements in Al-Quds. Over the past 2 months, Israeli forces have put up checkpoints at the entrances to the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood amid plans to evict dozens of families there. Israel has recently stepped up eviction of Palestinian families from East Al-Quds. A Palestinian government has called on the international community to take action against Tel Aviv's land grab policy. Bahrain's main opposition party, Al-Wafaq, has condemned the Al-Khalifa regime for dissolving the political party 4 or 5 years ago. The group accused the ruling family of trying to marginalize Bahraini people and get them away from politics. It said the Bahraini regime has proven that it cannot govern the country with its criminal acts. Al-Wafaq insisted that the country needs a comprehensive political plan to get out of the current crisis. It also called on Manama to respect Bahraini people's freedoms and rights. Persian Gulf nation witnessed a popular uprising in early 2011 that was met with a deadly crackdown from the Bahraini government with the help of Saudi Arabia. Scores of people have been killed and many others jailed since then. While the repercussions of the Saudi-led war on Yemen are getting worse year by year, thousands of the disabled in the war-torn country are deprived of their basic rights, such as access to medical assistance status amid the apathy of international bodies. Here's a report from Sana'a.
Since the beginning of the Saudi-led war on Yemen, thousands of civilians have lost their limbs, eyes, or got mentally disabled due to the lethal bombardment on civilian facilities. According to the Amnesty International, 4 million people with disabilities in Yemen face multiple challenges, and the number is growing up each year as the war continues.
We feel like there's deliberate negligence by the international organizations towards us, as they have not provided anything so far. This comes as the number of disabled exceeds 4 million, according to the UN organizations. We call on the international organizations to come and see our sufferings. Most of us don't even have a wheelchair.
Yemen's Disabled Care Fund says it provides health care services for more than 200,000 disabled, including 50,000 children who are getting educational services as well. However, the fund is suffering from a shortage of money amid the continued absence of related international organizations.
The Disabled Care Fund suffers from many difficulties, including lack of resources. Meanwhile, there is a significant increase in the number of the disabled each year. Sometimes we cannot provide wheelchairs and medicines for some of the disabled. Unfortunately, the international organizations turned a blind eye to this humanitarian catastrophe. We call on all the related international bodies to fulfill their duty towards the disabled Yemenis and provide aid to this vulnerable group.
In late 2015, the Saudi-led coalition has bombed the Anour Center for Care and Rehabilitation of the Blind in Sana'a, inflicting heavy damages on it. Since the beginning of the Saudi war on Yemen in March 2015, the relentless bombardments of the kingdom have killed tens of thousands of civilians, including women and the children.
Besides losing parts of their bodies, millions of people with disabilities are among those most oppressed groups amid what the United Nations has called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. They say the Saudi war and the blockade have turned their lives into a real tragedy. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi has arrived in Damascus for talks with Syrian officials. His visit is the first to the Arab country aimed at boosting economic cooperation between the two sides. Here's Mohammed Ali from Damascus.
Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi arrived in Damascus International Airport. He met with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, who said Syria looks forward to increasing cooperation with China in various domains, praising what he described as China's ethical policies. Assad thanked China for its stances in support of Syria's sovereignty, unity, and independence. Yi expressed his country's interest in Syria's participation in China's Belt and Road Initiative, which is a global infrastructure development strategy adopted by China to invest in nearly 70 countries and international organizations. He asserted that China will continue supporting the Syrian people in the fight on terror, challenging economic sanctions, and standing against foreign intervention.
The visit comes in the framework of ongoing Chinese support to Syria, as well as boosting cooperation in all sectors, especially now that the government controls most of the country. China played a positive role during the war on Syria in support of the legitimate government and the country's independence and stability.
An hour-long meeting was also held between the Chinese foreign minister and his Syrian counterpart, Faisal al-Miqdad, discussing political and economic topics of mutual interest. They agreed to take bilateral cooperation between their countries to a new level for the benefit of both countries' peoples.
The Chinese foreign minister visits Syria amid economic difficulties Syrians are facing due to the sanctions imposed by the U.S. and its allies. The visit is a message from China to the U.S. and the EU that their siege and pressure on Syrians will be broken by China, which is a strong economic power for sure.
During the Chinese official's visit, Syria and China signed two agreements in the economic and medical assistance sectors. China is one of Syria's staunch allies, which vetoed nearly a dozen UN draft resolutions on foreign intervention in Syria since the war started in 2011. The timing of the Chinese foreign minister's visit to Syria is very important for both the Syrian people and the government in light of the harsh economic situation they are living inside the country. China is conveying a message of support, especially in the economic sector, for Syrians. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Rebels in Ethiopia's Tigray region say they have released around 1,000 government soldiers. The Tigray People's Liberation Front, however, added that it'll hold more than 5,000 higher-ranking prisoners. Meanwhile, the Ethiopian police have detained over 300 people in Addis Ababa on suspicion of links to the TPLF and shut down their businesses. Several Ethiopian regions are preparing to send troops to fight the Tigrayan rebels. Clashes have raged between government forces and the TPLF in the restive northern region since November. Thousands of people have been killed and millions displaced in the conflict, which has pushed nearly 500,000 people to the verge of famine. Gunmen have killed one and abducted at least 60 people in northwestern Nigeria. Reports say the kidnapping occurred after armed men attacked five villages in the Shinkafi area of Zamfara State. A police official and local council member said a village head was shot dead when the overnight attack or attack status took place. Nigeria is battling a rise in armed robberies and kidnappings for ransom, where thinly stretched security forces often fail to stop the militants. Brazil has recorded over 34,000 new COVID-19 cases and nearly 870 deaths as the contagion continues to sweep across the country. The figures raise the nation's overall cases to over 19.3 million and put its fatalities at over 541,000. Brazil is grappling with the world's third worst outbreak and the second highest death toll following the United States. Meanwhile, in Mexico, the health ministry confirmed over 12,630 new cases and 225 deaths from the novel coronavirus. Latin American country has so far logged more than 2.6 million infections and over 236,000 coronavirus-related fatalities. COVID-19 cases surge in several EU nations, mainly attributed to the highly contagious Delta variant. The development could have major health and economic implications, Jerome Hughes explains.
Following an easing of restrictions in the EU and UK, coronavirus cases across Western Europe are on a sharp upward curve. The Delta variant, first identified in India and which spreads much more easily, is being blamed.
The world is becoming a village, so people travel, it's hard to contain.
See all the people here, and some people are not that careful, I think, so...
One word for me, go to vaccine.
The vast majority of young adults and children in the EU have not been vaccinated. This is why the virus is moving around so quickly, experts say.
In view of the rapid spread of the highly contagious Delta variant that is raising concerns not only in Europe but also around the globe, it is extremely important to vaccinate, as per national recommendations, as many people in Europe as possible.
Economists say the EU simply cannot afford further lockdowns. Economic forecasts for the 27-nation bloc are positive, but there are a lot of unknowns.
We continue to monitor the situation very closely, and in particular, and obviously, we are monitoring the Delta variant.
The fact that protectionist Donald Trump is no longer in the White House offers some economic hope, senior EU officials are indicating.
In terms of our relationships with the US, we have gone from a winter of discontents to a summer of cooperation.
In several EU nations, including Greece, France and Ireland, young people have staged protests believing they are being forced by governments to take the jab in order to participate in society. We have been getting some views in Belgium.
I mean, it's good that the protest is there, isn't it?
I feel forced to receive something I don't want to receive.
Be vaccinated or not, so you can't force people to do that.
Health authorities in the EU argue it is important that young people do get vaccinated, claiming they may only develop a mild illness initially with COVID-19, but could ultimately go on to suffer from long COVID, which can have life-changing implications. Campaigners say EU leaders are shooting themselves in the foot by not providing more vaccines to less well-off parts of the world. This could lead to new variants that might be resistant to existing vaccines, they warn. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The discovery of several mass graves containing remains of children who attended residential schools in Canada has renewed the debate on the historic mistreatment of the indigenous people in the country. Researchers say the graves found so far are only the tip of the iceberg.
The discovery of an unmarked graveyard at a former residential school run by the Catholic Church in the Canadian province of British Columbia in May, which contained at least 215 human remains, mostly young children, prompted an outpouring of grief and anger and a wider investigation into similar boarding schools that were open from the late 19th century to the mid-1990s. The probes have so far found some 1,100 bodies at the sites of former residential schools in the provinces of British Columbia and Saskatchewan. A Canadian researcher whose works contributed to the uncovering of the first mass grave has said the discoveries so far have barely scratched the surface. The residential school system in Canada was established in 1883 under the country's first prime minister, Sir John A. Macdonald. The aim was to assimilate indigenous peoples in Canada and destroy their languages and culture. By the 1920s, attending residential schools had been made mandatory for children aged between 7 and 15. Some 150,000 children were separated from their parents, often under threats of persecution.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. The death toll from catastrophic floods in western Germany and Belgium has risen to more than 125, local authorities have said, as emergency services continued their search for hundreds of people still missing. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's Europe correspondent John Henley. The piece is titled, Death Toll Exceeds 125 as Germany and Belgium Hit by Devastating Floods. Death toll from catastrophic floods in western Germany and Belgium has risen to more than 125, local authorities have confirmed, as emergency services continued their search for hundreds of people still missing. The German president, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, said he was stunned by the devastation caused by the flooding and pledged support to the families of those killed and to cities and towns facing significant damage. In the hour of need, our country stands together, Frank-Walter Steinmeier said on Friday afternoon, 16th of July. It's important that we show solidarity for those from whom the flood has taken everything. Authorities in the German state of Rhineland-Palatinate said 63 people had died there, including at least 12 residents of an assisted living facility for people with disabilities, while neighboring North Rhine-Westphalia province put the death toll at 43. Officials warned the figures could rise further, about 1,300 people in the Ahrweiler district of Rhineland-Palatinate remain unaccounted for, although efforts to contact them were being hindered by damage to telephone networks. Experts said the European Flood Awareness System, the EFAS, issued an extreme flood warning earlier this week and questioned why the toll was so high. Anna Cloak, a hydrologist, told the website Politico the disaster was a monumental failure of the system. The German Weather Service, the DWD, said it had passed on the warning to local authorities, who should have been responsible for organizing any necessary evacuations. The German Interior Minister, Horst Seehofer, said Germany must prepare much better in the future, adding that this is a consequence of climate change. German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier called for greater effort to combat global warming. Only if we decisively take up the fight against climate change will we be able to limit the extreme weather conditions we're now experiencing, he said. Experts are saying such disasters were likely to happen more often due to climate change. Some parts of Western Europe received up to 2 months of rainfall in the space of just 2 days. World Meteorological Organization spokesperson Claire Nullis said. While she said it was too soon to blame the floods and preceding heat wave on global heating, Claire Nullis said that the climate crisis was increasing the frequency of extreme events, while many single events have been shown to be made worse by global warming. The Belgian Interior Minister, Annelies Verlinden, said the country's death toll had risen to 20, with another 20 still listed as missing. Most of the dead were found around Liège, a city of 200,000 people, despite an order for residents of central districts and areas bordering the Meuse River to evacuate. Interior Minister Annelies Verlinden said water levels on the Meuse River running into the Netherlands remained critical. There are a number of dikes on the Meuse where it really is touch and go whether they will collapse, she said. The army has been sent to 4 of the country's 10 provinces to help with rescue operations and evacuations, along with teams of emergency workers dispatched from Italy and France. Residents of some towns, including the resort of Spa, which has been underwater since late on Wednesday, were being accommodated in tents. While they have so far suffered no loss of life, Switzerland, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands were also severely affected by the floods, with flash floods sweeping through the Swiss villages of Schleitheim and Beggingen. Several towns in the Grand Duchy evacuated on Thursday, and thousands were told to leave their homes in the southern Dutch city of Maastricht. The water level in the Maas River, as the Meuse is known in Dutch, reached its maximum forecast height in Maastricht on Thursday night, 15th of July, but stayed below what the authorities had termed as the doom scenario, averting widespread flooding. At least 550 households were evacuated in Roermond, while authorities in Venlo evacuated about 200 hospital patients due to the looming threat of flooding from the river. The Dutch caretaker Prime Minister Mark Rutte formally declared a disaster, freeing up state funds to pay for the damage. By far the highest death toll, though, was in Germany, where 114,000 households were without power, and rescuers on Friday were focusing their efforts on helping people trapped in their homes, particularly in the town of Erfstadt, southwest of Cologne. Regional authorities said several people had died or been reported missing after their houses collapsed when the ground beneath them sank suddenly in a major landslide. Aerial photographs show what appeared to be a massive sinkhole. "We managed to get 50 people out of their houses last night," Frank Rock, a local official, said. "We know of 15 people who still need to be rescued." One has to assume that under the circumstances, some people didn't manage to escape. Roads around Erfstadt, southwest of Cologne, were impassable, with rescue crews trying to reach residents by boat and having to rely on walkie-talkies to communicate. "The mobile network has collapsed, the infrastructure has collapsed, hospitals can't take in anyone, nursing homes had to be evacuated," a regional government spokesperson in Cologne confirmed. Meanwhile, more rain has been forecast for parts of the region where water levels in the Rhine River and its tributaries continue to rise. Nearly 1,000 soldiers have been deployed to help with rescue operations and rubble clearing in affected towns and villages. At least 24 people were confirmed dead in Uskirchen, one of the worst-hit towns in Germany. Reporters on the scene described a normally well-ordered center transformed into a mountain of rubble and house fronts ripped off by the floods. Thousands of people remain homeless after their houses were destroyed or deemed at risk by the authorities, including several villages around the Steinbach Reservoir that experts say could collapse under the weight of the floods. "I fear that we only see the full extent of the disaster in the coming days," the German Chancellor Angela Merkel said late on Thursday, 15th of July. She was speaking in Washington, D.C., where she is visiting President Joe Biden, calling it a day characterized by fear, despair, and suffering. Angela Merkel said her government would not leave those affected alone with their suffering, adding that it was doing its utmost to help them in their hour of distress. The conservative governor of North Rhine-Westphalia, Armin Laschet, who is running to succeed Angela Merkel as chancellor in elections due in September, called an emergency meeting of the cabinet on Friday, 16th of July. "It is a reality that extreme weather events will influence our everyday life more strongly in the future," Armin Laschet said. He added, "We have to continue down Germany's path towards climate neutrality at a faster pace." But he also said that the problems caused by the climate crisis cannot be solved in North Rhine-Westphalia state or in Germany. Malu Dreyer, the governor of Rhineland-Palatinate, said climate change was not abstract anymore. "We are experiencing it up close and painfully."
Food for thought.
Hello everyone and a happy day to you all. Today also as food for thought we have selected another beautiful aphorism from the master of eloquence and wisdom, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. The first infallible successor to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. "Incapability is a catastrophe. Endurance is bravery. abstinence is riches. Self-restraint is a shield against sin. And the best companion is submission to Allah's will.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Shuma dar in qarn mo'jiza kardid. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر خمینی رهبر.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello and welcome to our audience.
and a warm welcome to our listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World. This is a program dedicated to the life and times of Imam Khomeini. May God bless his great soul. And on this program, I'd like to welcome my expert and guest, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi. I'd like to say salam to him and welcome him to the program, first of all. Salam, sir.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes. Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, I think on a previous session, we were talking about the fact that this is a spiritual thing when we say death to America, because many journalists and people who view this particular phenomenon here in Iran since the early days of the revolution say that they feel that a death to America is coming along any moment now during the khutbah, during the speech at the Friday prayers. Tell me, you know, in terms of what Imam Khomeini said about America, and when we look at it, relations at the moment, 35 years on, where, you know, there are overtures, diplomatic overtures, between some kind of rapprochement between Iran and the U.S., but we still see that the positions are completely opposite to one another. We can't see how these two nations can, in any shape or form, come together. Your take, sir, I mean, I think I feel another death to America coming on personally as I sit here. give me your take on that, sir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Please feel free to...
Thank you. Death to America. Because really, I mean, I'm at this moment in time, honestly, because of Syria and because of many other issues, even what happened at Guantanamo Bay to those poor individuals, who some of them were innocent, were lifted from Afghanistan and tortured horrendously in that
place. Some of them were kids.
And some of them were kids. They were innocent kids. I mean, I myself personally would be more happier to utter these three words. And, you know, with the spiritual significance with which Imam Khomeini, may God bless his day, because he doesn't say things for no reason, that this is the great Satan. He was saying it.
That's what I'm going to say.
There's a fundamental nature to this particular creature, which we have to avoid.
I think, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Imam Khomeini said something much worse or much heavier or much more
deeper,
intense.
Yes.
Deeper
in
than
wisdom.
Death to America.
Yes.
He said America is the great Satan.
He said. Absolutely.
Okay. That's worse. That's more intense.
Yes.
Okay?
It is.
Right. Mm. So, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff being said these days, like, oh, you know, if you just don't say that, then, you know.
But I think Imam's view of America was basically, as we've discussed in some programs previously, which is that you have a taghut. You have an entity which claims to be ruling and which claims to have sovereignty without God's permission.
Exactly.
Okay.
This is the fundamental
now, it could
point.
Be
this
taghut,
is the Quranic point.
Right.
Yes.
And then, you know, it sources it out. It has its local little taghuts like the Shah during the time.
Yes.
You know, who can't go to the bathroom without asking America's permission.
Permission, yes.
You know.
He needed it in writing.
So, and again, and taghut is a Quranic concept.
Yes.
It's not something that Imam made up. It's
not something
the Muslims have just made up.
No,
it's in the Quran in the sense that it says that, you know, don't follow the taghut. Don't follow those who, without permission of God, without any credibility, without any legitimacy, exactly, are claiming to be, you know, God's savior and, you know, the chosen people and those who will, you know, bring peace and prosperity and happiness and justice and the American way to the rest of the world, okay? So, Imam's animosity, enmity, confrontation with the U.S. was with the essence of what they are.
Yes.
Okay, it has nothing to do with specifically America, you know.
Doing this or doing that.
Right, as a historical entity.
Yeah, or some kind erroneous policy that they had in foreign relations.
If the Soviets were claiming the same thing, he would say the same thing.
Exactly.
If the Chinese were claiming the same thing, he would say the same thing about them. If the Indians were claiming the same thing, he would say the same thing. If the French were claiming the same thing, he would say the same thing about them.
Sure.
So it's about Imam's enmity is not simply a historic one rooted in the troubled history between Iran and the U.S.
and the U.S.
and the way the U.S. supported the most vile people as rulers and as torturers and as executioners in this country.
In this country of the
Islamic
Republic,
yes.
our, this is not some theoretical matter.
No, this
when you have America supporting, a dictator, a brutal dictator, a security service, which just executes, tortures, imprisons people.
Anything
at will,
that they had to say about the monarch.
These are actually people's fathers, uncles,
yes,
brothers, cousins, yourself, even mothers, even sisters. So it's not even. It's not some theoretical thing. It's a real thing on a daily basis. We know what the Americans did.
Mm.
You know, you can't leave. You can't forget about that. You can't just say, "Oh, well, it was a." And they still do it.
Yes.
Like you were saying, it's not like they've changed. It's not like they made a mistake and they said, "Well, sorry about that."
No. No, they wouldn't.
You
even
know,
sorry.
we're not gonna have secret CIA prisons anymore.
No.
We're not gonna have Guantanamo. People being picked up from places randomly and dropped into a little enclave in Cuba so that nobody can claim that you brought them to U.S. soil.
Sure.
You know?
No, but
it's not like that the U.S. has stopped doing these things.
No.
It's not like that the U.S. has stopped, having massive surveillance and, spying on every, cockroach that, walks the earth.
Sure.
So it's like, why would we want to forget about all that?
Exactly. And why would you want to forget the fact that it was the U.S. and, of course, the what we call the cannibal allies now, the Takfiris of the, Saudi persuasion, which we see now occurring 35 years on. But at that time, they were supporting a brutal dictator in Iraq and imposed an 8-year war.
Right.
And supplying him with chemical weapons.
Right. So these are things that, we can't suddenly say, why would Imam say this about anyone?
Exactly.
Or any nation.
Exactly.
Because they deserve it.
They deserve that, yes. Because they fundamentally in nature and characteristic have not changed.
Right. Now, this is a problem we have in Iran with certain people because they are genetically predisposed to think that if we have quote-unquote good relations, then everything is going to
be somehow rosy.
Right. Then we will have paradise on earth, And this is a deep issue. This is not. You know what I mean? This is a deep spiritual disease.
The disease, I think so.
Okay,
yeah.
It's not simply a miscalculation or a lack of, proper understanding of the realities of international relations, or an ignorance of U.S. history. It's all that. Okay. It's all that.
It's
what
all
I just
that.
Mentioned.
Yes.
But the root of it, the cause, the real cause of it, is a deep spiritual disease. Thinking that if you just hook up with the biggest,
devil on the
godfather
earth.
That is, mafia don that's running things, then you will be okay.
Yeah.
Just don't let the don, kill you.
Exactly.
If you've got the don running the neighborhood, don't stand up to the don. Mm. Right?
Quite.
And this is a disease.
It is.
It's the disease that, Imam Hussein went to Karbala to fight.
Exactly.
Just don't mess with Muawiyah. Don't mess with Yazid.
Ah.
Okay?
Yeah, keep quiet.
Keep quiet. Just do your thing.
Do your thing.
Right?
But don't say anything
to
the Umayyads.
Go kiss the hand and the ring when you have to.
Yes.
And,
make
if you can get out of it, if you can get something good out of it, good. If not, he will crush you.
He will crush you.
And this comes from a lack of belief. Mm. I'm talking about real...
Yes.
Real belief, not just something you
superficially we're talking
utter with your tongue, or I've read the Quran, I believe in God.
Yes,
it's believing that God actually is the
true
active
sovereign.
Live agent in one's life.
Life, yes.
As opposed to he created billions of years ago. Now he's sitting on the side.
Side, yes.
Giving it, let the Americans do. Okay, this is, and let me be very open about this.
Yes.
And some people are not going to like this. It's a form of shirk.
Very beautifully put, sir.
They're mushrik.
And
we even have this in theology.
We do.
We have tohide zati. We have essential tohid, which relates to the existence of God. So we say, there's only one God. And most people, because they can't really fathom it on a deeper level, they say, of course, we don't have multiple gods.
No.
Right? Then we have.
But they're talking
then
in terms of numbers.
Then we have tohid sifati, which is relates to sifat, which relates to the characteristics and the names of God.
Yes.
That, even though there's different names of God, they're not in conflict with each other. This is what we talked about in the previous program.
Sure.
We said,
the vengeance and, you know, the justice is within his rahmah. So yes. These are not separate from each other.
No.
Okay? Now, and then we have, you know, this is where the people have a problem, which is, you know, it's called Tawheed al-Rububiyyat, in yes. his Rabb, him being the Lord.
Lord.
The actual Lord that does the things.
Yes, the sovereign
it's
Lord.
It's not simply some, you know, old man with a white beard in the sky.
Unfortunately,
you know. Okay?
Still with that kind of image.
This is where most of us become mushrik. And I'm talking about people who pray and fast and read the
yes,
Quran. And,
exactly.
You know, are
because,
good Muslims.
Because I wanted to point out very quickly from the Holy Quran, especially this example is very, very crucial if you really want to believe as a Muslim, as someone who has submitted and surrendered himself to the sovereign Lord, is Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam.
Right.
Because he's the Hanif. He's the one who understood the ultimate reality, the ultimate sense of who his Lord actually is. And once you have that picture that this is the one who watches me, cares for me, provides for my provision, my sustenance, my life or my death, this is the reality on which we are weak. Are we not?
Let me give you an example,
please.
I'm assuming that we're going to get to the point in these so-called negotiations with the U.S. Mm-hmm. where the U.S. is going to say, we want this from you.
Mm-hmm.
The Iranians are going to say, we want this from you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
mutually
sure.
wanting things.
Mutually, yeah.
Right? And you're not. Neither side is going to be able to deliver what the other side wants.
Exactly.
For many reasons.
Yes,
whether
of course.
It's related to domestic issues at home, whether yeah. the Congress, whether it's related to, mm-hmm. you know, Iran having its red lines in terms of its sovereignty mm-hmm. and, you know, its national dignity.
Sure.
We're going to get to a point in these negotiations, mm-hmm. and, you know, they're giving themselves 6 to 9 months. I think it's, you know, maybe a year.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get to a point where they're like, you know what, we can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Americans are going to go on TV and they're like, it was the Iranians' fault.
Their fault.
The people here in Iran who are, you know, dying to be, you know, Americans, mm. you know, even though they look like monkeys when they imitate them. But
yes.
anyways, they like to be American monkeys.
Sure.
Those in Iran will, you know, start writing their articles and their news, you know, they're going to go on and say, oh, you know, Iranians didn't, you know, play ball.
But play ball, yes. Right. They'll blame fellow
right.
Iranians.
Iranians,
yes.
Iranian officials are going to be like, no, the Americans were making outlandish demands. We couldn't give in to those demands. We wanted things from them. They weren't willing to do one single thing.
Sure.
So this whole thing is going to be over in a year.
Yeah, I think
okay?
so. Okay? I think so.
And we're going to go back to the way it was in terms of, you know, people understanding what the realities are. Mm. Okay?
Mm.
The problem is that, you know, certain people, I'm talking about Muslims,
mm.
they don't understand that. Let's assume that this happens, that everything falls apart, and the Iranians, Iranian officials are steadfast, saying, you know what, we're not going to submit to this, even though there might be pressure from the sanctions, even though there's going to be, you know, price issues
sure.
and inflation
sure.
and so on.
Absolutely.
We're not going to be go begging to the Taghut. We're not going to go begging to the Zalim.
Exactly.
To the oppressor,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And imagine if this happens, and then God suddenly turns the whole thing around.
Ah. Because that's something that does happen.
Because that's what he tells you. He says, you know, he says in the Quran, he says, you know, shaitan, you know, threatens you and scares you with
poverty
and corruption.
Corruption.
And izzat is from me.
Me.
And I give you, and
honor.
I promise you honor and izzat and dignity.
Yes.
Okay. Now, wouldn't it be nice if some of these people in Iran would actually think about what God is telling them?
Exactly.
And didn't we see it happening in these years?
Yes.
Wherever we stood up, mm-hmm. for Islam,
yes.
we followed what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala was telling us in the Quran and what the Prophet was telling us and what the Aimeh were telling us. When we did that, we were successful. You know, there's Ali Qarati, who's famous in Iran. I'm sure you've seen him, you know,
sure,
on
yes.
TV. You know, he's the one that did the whole literacy campaign after the revolution, you know. And he says, don't say America when you're not doing well. Don't say it's America. Say Israf. Say that you've been wasteful. Because when
Very
you're wasteful,
nice.
Allah takes away the things that He's given you. So we have a society when people are wasteful, they don't, you know, thank God for the blessings that they have. They don't reflect on what happened, you know, 2 days ago in their life.
Yes.
When Allah honored them with, you know, the way they were trying to go on that path of Quran, and where they failed, and they were in misery when they were groveling at the feet of some you know Lord, you know, quote unquote, other than God.
Mm.
So what do you think is going to happen? If you go with God, not only is it a promise in the Quran, but
yeah.
our life in these years has shown this.
Yes.
Okay?
And you're an independent sovereign nation in these years.
All the sanctions, and look, in terms of, you know...
And the world acknowledges that.
In terms of knowledge and, and create, you know,
creativity and innovation.
And innovation. And in terms of, you know,
technological
standard of living.
Progress and
I mean,
advance.
Look at the standard of living. If you compare it to 40 years ago, it's not comparable.
It's not comparable.
You know,
it's
a whole different world. No, you know, you had a situation, a country where people were peasants, where they were illiterate.
Yes.
And now it's like, you know, everybody's got, you know, their mobile, everybody's got, you know, whatever. Yeah. Everything that, you know, you would expect a normal average
I think
person in the West to have.
To be honest, I have been to Tehran and I sometimes think that people have a better standard of living than many people in European nations. And I
exactly,
know
like we talked about.
Yeah,
you know?
From personal experience,
you know,
I can see that.
An average person in Iran, even though there's, you know, high prices.
A lot of difficulty,
right?
High prices, yes.
But on the average person, the middle class person in Iran, has a better
quality of life
than an average person in, you know.
In Europe.
Pick a city.
Athens.
No, I'm talking about even, you know.
Yeah, in Birmingham.
London, Birmingham,
anywhere,
you know, Liverpool.
You know, Manchester,
you know.
Hull.
Glasgow's
a bit better. Hull's one of the worst places in Britain.
Or some place in France or in Germany.
Yeah.
So the point is that Imam, when he starts saying these things, it's the great Satan, when he says they are the root of all problems in the world. And he said this.
That's right. That's right. The root of all problems in this world. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
You had Bush and Condi Rice and those guys
deciding,
you know what? Because at that time, Bandar, our old friend.
Oh, yeah, Bandar.
He had left as ambassador of the U.S. And his half-brother, I think it was Faisal or Turkey
Turkey or Faisal, one of them.
Right,
I remember that.
Right? Had come as the new ambassador.
New ambassador.
Okay, and he was a little bit more moderate, a little bit more worldly, and a little bit more, you know, diplomatic.
Mm.
And he basically said to the Americans and together, they decided, you know what, with this whole Iraq thing happening, with this whole Afghanistan thing happening, it would be good if we tried to be a little, you know, a little rapprochement with Iran wouldn't hurt us. Right?
Yeah.
With this whole Israel under attack and, you know, Hezbollah and all that. Let's see what we can do here.
Yeah.
To this level, we're not talking about a real opening.
Yeah, yeah,
we're talking about, let's take away this hostility, this rhetoric a little, let's step it back. You know, I'm sure the Saudis were like, well, we can be, you know, we can mediate. Whatever.
Mediate, yes.
Okay, so this is the Saudi ambassador in Washington saying this.
Yes.
Bandar gets a whiff of it back in Riyadh.
Mm.
Gets on his private jet, flies straight to Andrews Air Force Base.
Right.
Gets off the plane, goes to Condi and says, you can't do this.
Oh.
What do you mean, friends with Iran? Are you nuts? Right? What do you mean, rapprochement? What do you mean, you know?
Well, I'll give it to Bandar. At least he understands that aspect
of
everything.
It was so bad. It was so bad that, whatever, Faisal Turki, whoever it was, he resigned as an ambassador.
My goodness.
He said, I'm the ambassador.
Yeah.
What are you flying over here
for? Exactly.
And once he realized that it's not, you know, there's issues, namely that, you know, the Israelis and the Saudis, Bandar and Bibi, Bandar
are
and
not
going to
allow.
That's good. We got to get
it. Yeah, Bandar and Bibi, yeah.
Bibi, Bandar. Bibi.
It sounds like, you know, the Bush-Blair Corporation, BBC, but there we are. It's very good. Yes,
right?
Bandar and Bibi.
Had decided, you know, that, you know what, we need to, you know, whatever, cripple Iran or whatever.
Yeah,
whatever,
that's right. Yeah.
You know, who cares what Faisal Turki?
But
so he resigned. He was ambassador for 15 months.
Sure.
A little bit more than a year. After a while, he's like, you know what? I'm out of here. Because I can't work like this. I'm discussing things, and then this guy flies in. What I'm trying to explain is that this is nothing new.
No.
We had this during the Bush era you know, Bandar came and said, you know,
canceled
all options on the table.
Sure.
And as, you know, usual, Condi and, you know, George and Donald and Dick. And
yes,
you know,
Donald Dick, yes, that's right. Makes a whole difference from Donald Duck, yes, but we're talking about the same kind of politics.
Exactly.
Yes,
all of them saluted, yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay, and you know,
Donald Duck would.
Bandar was threatening them. You know,
yes,
he wasn't asking.
Yeah, yeah,
he was saying,
no,
you know what, we'll just go give our oil
to
the Chinese, forget about dollar denomination
of
oil, forget about allowing your ships access. You know, we're going to play you like we always do.
Do.
Crudely and openly and hard-fisted and ham-fisted.
Yes.
Okay?
Sure.
And they all said, you know what? You know, sorry.
Yes.
Sorry for mentioning it.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, fast forward to this.
Is this, yes.
You know,
yeah.
You know, Mr. Zarif does his thing, talking, you know,
sure.
smiling, you know, negotiation.
Sure.
And what happens? Who flies in? Last time it was Bandar. This time it was Bibi.
Bibi.
All right? Flies in.
Flies in. And dictates to...
And says to, you know...
Obama, let's not have any of this.
And remember, his name is Hossein, right?
Yes.
To Hossein.
We're not having any of this. Tighten the sanctions.
This is a, you know, a wolf in sheep's clothing. This is all lies.
Yes.
The Iranians are liars. They're genetically liars. Yes. It's all lies.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Very racist.
Oh, he is.
By the way, just very kind of crude. Imagine saying these generalities about Jews. Imagine what... crazy thing would happen in the world.
The media would have a field day.
If Aray Zarif or Aray Rouhani would go in and be like, you know, the Jews can't be trusted because they always, you know, look after, they're always looking out for number one. You know, if somebody were to say, oh, the Jews always looking out for number one, always playing everyone, how dare anybody even say that, right?
Yes.
And I don't believe that that's the case with all Jews, but hey, somebody could look at history and say this is something they do. Now imagine somebody saying that. No, but... Bibi is allowed to come and say every insult
to
Iranians.
Yes,
and you know their character.
Say all those lies,
all those things that they have to know. They're lying. You know, the religious leader is lying about not wanting atomic weapons. This is all a ruse. This is all, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Okay. And what does Hossein do?
All options are all back on the table.
Don't worry about it. We will get all we need to get out of Iran.
Sure.
Okay. So, this is who we're dealing with. This is why the Supreme Leader said, you know, we have nothing against people talking to each other, but you have to remember who the party on the other side is. You shouldn't forget who they are.
Who they are.
Okay?
Exactly.
And some people, unfortunately, in Iran...
Still don't get that.
And in the Islamic world, still don't understand who America is. They still have goodwill to them.
Sure.
They still think... And this, to me, is not evidence of their goodness, the people who have this in their heart.
Sure.
Is not evidence that they're good people.
No.
It's evidence that they are ignorant, that they have a disease in their heart.
I think
they have a flaw in their character.
If you don't mind me saying, Dr. Madhichap, because, you know, in the last couple of minutes, I think Egypt's a wonderful example of what's exactly happening at the moment. They tried to be everything to everyone, especially to the U.S., and what happens? They get hijacked. And this is exactly the sort of thing that, thank God, with the leadership of Imam Khomeini, because this program is dedicated to the man who changed the world. Really, I mean, all my hat goes off to him every time that, you know, really this man was remarkable. That, you know, he had that foresight, that, you know, that vision, that he saw exactly things for what they were. And, you know, he clarified it for us. And this is why you've survived these 35 years. And God willing, if you carry on like that, and I love the fact that Bibi keeps doing that thing, where he says, oh, we're a moment away by tightening the sanctions. Yes, we are a moment away by becoming even more independent and more stronger than we've ever been before.
And look, who is the crazy one now?
Yeah, who's the crazy
Who's the one that everybody's making fun of?
Sure.
Who is the one they're like,
this dude's crazy. People are laughing him out of the room.
Right? It's, look, just think about the people that Americans and the British elites have, you know, allied themselves with.
Exactly.
It's, you know... Animals like Bandar and Bibi.
Bandar and Bibi show.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, of all the people in the world you're going to be allied with, of all the people you're going to allow them to fly in their private jet into Andrews Fairs and come to you privately. You're getting Bandar to come? Who, you know, is funding the people who chop off heads with kitchen knives?
That's right. Christian priests who had their heads hacked off.
People
the
who,
saws?
Yeah, who like yeah. they cut open the chests and take out hearts
and put them in.
And he likes it. Believe he likes it. Oh, yeah. Don't think he's like revolted by it. I'm holding my nose.
No.
He's like, go do this.
Go and do this.
Because this will show our power, and this will show how you can't mess with us.
Yes,
you know.
Exactly.
And then Bibi, I like to call him, you know, Bibi Mr. Smuts.
Yeah.
You know, like Jan Smuts wasn't that bad. You know, Bota, Bibi Bota, you know?
Bibi Bota.
Right? Yeah, you know, who just hangs in there with apartheid. You know, the whole world is like, dude, you know, chill out on this. You know, separate roads, you know, for Palestinians and for Jews, you know?
Exactly.
And no, he's like, no, that's it. We're sticking to this, you know? So these are the people that Western elites have allied themselves with. And the question for us...
Yes.
And the issue that we have to think about,
sure.
and the issue that our listeners should, in my view,